Hey, everybody. Good morning. It is October 20th, 2020. Regardless of the date, my name's Larry Jacobs. How you doing? It's a pleasure to have you here today. We've got another good friend of mine here today as well. We've got Dr. Carrie Borkowski, okay? A great friend of the show, writer for our magazine, Equity and Access, works with us on equity and all that. She's amazing. She's an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University at the School of Education there, where we have a lot of friends there, Ashley Berner, Stacey Harden, okay, Jonathan Plucker. I can go right down a whole list, okay? But Dr. Borkowski, okay, teaches and advises doctoral students there, and her research, and this is why she's such a nice person, it centers on cultivating community and a sense of belonging in learning spaces that include virtual and face-to-face classrooms, virtual classrooms, hear that? Okay, plus also boardrooms, community meetings, school board meetings, that sort of thing, anywhere that individuals come together to learn with and from each other, and particularly in education. So Carrie's going to be with us in just a minute. As soon as I'm telling you what I tell you every day, we are the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, which is where we put all our podcasts now. They're all archived over there, and there's a big icon at ace-ed.org, and you can just click through and listen to all the shows that we've done. Over there also is your way to become a member of our consortium, of course, free to all educators. Again, ace-ed.org, the American Consortium on Equity. It's so important in education. Our magazine is over there, too. It's our online journal called Equity and Access. You'll love it if you haven't seen it. Flip through it. It's all free. Oh, go over, check it out. We'd love your voice heard. Please join with us over at ace-ed.org. We will tweet out the show over at EduTalk Radio. On LinkedIn, it's under my name, Larry Jacobs. And on Facebook, it's Larry Jacobs. And also at Education Talk Radio. We make them all different just to mix you up. Okay, that's our goal in life, to keep you on your toes, okay, during these crazy times and everybody's stuck in, etc. And I hope everybody's doing well with the pandemic, etc., but here's somebody to cheer you up and guide you along the way. We're going to talk about reimagining education with Dr. Carrie Borkowski. Hi, Carrie. Larry's here.
Hey, Larry. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing well. You sound a little like you have a cold. I hope you're okay.
I am, and, you know, I heard that in my voice, and I have my headsets on, and I'm fighting. I think it's a touch of asthma and a little bit of a never-ending allergy. They can't figure out what it is, so my voice is always straining these days. Thank you for noticing, my dear. I appreciate
that. Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, it does sound a little strained.
So nice.
It does. I agree.
It's so nice to chat with you, though. I feel like it's been a little while. I've been writing and speaking with other folks at ACE, but not you, so it's great to reconnect, Larry.
You're always welcome here, Carrie. You know that, okay?
And
by the way, I have to tell you what always drives me nuts. Your name, of course, is Carrie Borkowski. And for some reason in my stupid head, I always want to say Corey Borkowski. I get the T A and the O. It's one of those things that you think about, it makes you absolutely nuts, you know? One of those. So
no worries. No
everybody
worries.
Is Carrie Borkowski. Yep. And boy, my voice is straining a little bit today. Okay, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's weird. Okay, so anyway, all right, let's talk about this. And by the way, you sent me a question you wanted me to ask you. Quote, we have so much going on during this pandemic. Why have a focus on reimagining education? Why now? And I'm going to answer that. What's going on right now in education, here we go, and then you can go. What's going on in education right now is a real sea change. It's forcing the issue. And I think of it the same way that World War II ended. In England, they had no health care. They had no health care system. It was all destroyed by the German bombs. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they created their national health system. Okay? And that worked really great. And it's their, although they moan and groan like everybody does, it's their pride and joy because somehow it does work. So when we say, why should we reimagine education now? Did I steal your answer? I think this is the perfect time to do that. Did I steal your answer?
You didn't, but I think the World War II analogy is a good one, Larry. I mean, I was going to
give me an A.
Give
me an A, Dr. Borkowski.
Absolutely. A plus. So yeah, I agree with you. I think why not? Right. We should be talking about change right now. And there's so much literature out there. Charles Payne wrote this great book, So Much Reform, So Little Change. And what he talked about was we get stuck in these structures and these traditions of like how things are. And so even when there's good, you know, proposals for interventions, we get stuck in the old ways of doing things. And what the pandemic has done and what you articulated, Larry, is
we're doing
everything differently, right? Like everything looks different right now, whether you're hybrid or remote or even in person, it's different. So yeah, we should be reimagining education right now. It's a perfect opportunity.
We should, and we should also, is my voice better now? Is my voice better right now?
It is, actually.
Okay,
yeah.
I actually muted my mic and blew my nose. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, that's a HIPAA violation. Okay, that might have been it. I don't know. Okay, what can I tell you? Okay,
thanks for
that
extra information.
It's a little bit better right now, so we'll move on from there. And just pretend that last 10 seconds never happened. All right, so we'll just move on from there. All right. You know, this is the time. The time is now, I got to tell you, because, you know, we have been mired in a system that was created in 1876 or something. Okay, it's unbelievable, and the time has come to make a difference. And what you do, Carrie, is so important, mm-hmm. all right, because we always talk with you about a sense of belonging, okay, a sense of, getting together, cultivating a community, which is hard to do virtually, but it's not impossible to do. And we need your thoughts on this more than ever right now. We got to reimagine what we're going to do, because I'm telling you, things have really changed. They've changed, period, end of discussion. Okay? Your thoughts?
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it, you know, I think it's a little bit of a myth, Larry, that we believe that it's harder to do online. I have to tell people that it's not harder, it's just different. And you really you're not bumping into your colleagues at the sort of, you know, metaphorical water cooler or seeing your students necessarily, you know, face to face. You're having to be really intentional about creating purposeful space to make those connections. And so I think it's just different. It's not harder. I think I don't like to say silver linings of the pandemic, because it really has just been rough the whole way through. But I think one of the opportunities in the pandemic is what I've noticed with educators in our district and around the state and really in the country is that we're slowing down and paying attention to the needs of ourselves, our colleagues, and our students from an emotional standpoint. We're all dealing with this pandemic in all sorts of ways. And in a lot of ways, it's forced us to look at this idea of connection and belonging. So I think, yeah.
In other words, your time is now, Dr. Borkowski.
My time is now. Absolutely.
you are the Baroness of Belonging. You are the Baroness of Belonging.
Right. Oh, my goodness. That's hilarious.
There you go.
That's so funny.
Countess of Community, the Baroness of Belonging, Dr. Carrie Borkowski.
Oh, my goodness.
It's true.
All these alliterations, you're hilarious. It's been wonderful, actually, Larry, because I had an opportunity. Our district is a smaller district in Massachusetts, but I had an opportunity to do a professional learning day with our teachers, and there were over 100 people that attended to learn about how to cultivate community online. So it's definitely something people are talking about.
Right, that's great. And thank you for doing that. What district was it? Can you say? You want to say?
Oh, it's in Situate. Yeah, Situate, just in the south.
Right south of Boston, everybody. Right south of Boston. Okay, and a really nice seashore community, oceanside community down south of Boston. It's beautiful down there. All right, I'm so glad that they recognized what they had in the community. Okay, IEU.
Yeah, well, we have great leaders, a new superintendent, and some wonderful teachers. So they know what's important, you know, the content and the sort of emotional and community side of things. So it was a lovely, lovely day for sure. So
I bet it was. And, you know, let's go back to those words, reimagining education. Did you talk to them about that kind of thing? And what was their reaction? I mean, these are educators. They're in the classrooms or whatever. They're in the trenches, I'll just say, every day. Okay, they're facing kids. all right, facing mm-hmm. administrators, facing parents. And you talk about reimagining education and changing the way we structure it. What did they say when you talked about that? Or how did they react to that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, to nobody's surprise, Larry, you know, teachers enter the classrooms and our schools to promote learning and to support
yep.
students. And so if you can convince a teacher that reimagining education is going to result in, you know, positive outcomes for students and positive work environments for teachers and leaders, then they're on board, right? It's not that hard to convince them. The challenge is figuring out what that looks like and providing the support to our teachers to do that kind of work, right? And that's what I tried to do in a very small way in a professional learning day. And they were doing, and all around the country and probably really around the world, you know, educators and instructional designers are doing that kind of work to support our educators and our schools to really reimagine not just education, but just the day-to-day for our students. Like, it just looks different right now. It really does.
It is different. It doesn't just look different. It is different. Okay? It's
it different. Is different. Absolutely.
All right?
Absolutely.
It really is. Okay? And I can only imagine if I were a kid now, I'd have maybe one eye on my computer and the other eye on my TV. I just know that. Okay? I know that. Okay? I'd be terrible
yeah.
with this. God bless the kids for doing it right.
It is tricky.
You know, it is tricky. So, what'd you tell them to do? Let's be simple about it. What's the process? Where do you even begin?
Yeah, I mean, so I think, again, the first thing I really did, Larry, was to have a conversation with teachers about reminding them that they need to remember their skills and their own abilities and sort of their natural inclinations. And then we need to figure out how does that translate virtually, right? Because we all know how to make human connections and we want to make those human connections with our students. So it was really talking through and sort of reminding them and encouraging them that, like, you know how to do this work. I'm just giving you a new set of tools, you know, to use to do that work. And I talked about sort of this idea of, you know, taking a five-star or a Michelin star chef from a fancy kitchen and throwing them in a garage and telling them, now make this fancy meal, right? It's just it's a different context. You still have the same skills and you have that gut instinct of a teacher. It's just learning some new skills and some new tools to do that work. And that's really what we spent the time on is what can you do in a Zoom session? What could you do with different tools synchronously
mm-hmm.
or asynchronously and talking through that and practicing, really practicing.
So is the first step in the process, the first priority, recognizing your own skills?
I think the first step is, you know, especially in a pandemic, Larry, is giving yourself some grace, right? And reminding yourself that you're an educator. I think
reminding yourself how good a job you did in the spring.
That's
when
right.
when all of a sudden everything went nuts. All right, something
that's
you
right.
were never trained to do, you had to do. It's kind of like all
that's
of a sudden
right.
finding yourself in a war. Okay,
that's right.
Suddenly you
yeah.
have to do
yeah.
things that you never even imagined you would have to do, and somehow we wind up doing it. Okay, and somehow
right.
we don't get
that's
it right,
right
from the beginning, but we get it right eventually. All right,
and absolutely.
This is,
yeah.
You need to pat yourself on the back and say, "What a good job we did." Step one.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. yeah. And I think the other thing that we talked a lot about in this session was remembering that just in the way that you plan any lesson that would be face to face, you articulate a purpose and what's the objective. And so if your purpose is to connect with your students or create relationships, cultivate community, then from that purpose, all activities should come, right? Those should be in support of that objective. So just being very intentional about what you plan to do, what your purpose is. And if it's building, if today the only thing I'm going to do for the first 15 minutes is focus on community, then just like you would plan a math lesson and all the activities, you do the same with building community. So really structuring it in a way that teachers understand with curriculum and syllabi and activities and scaffolding is really the way to go with this work.
But most teachers, and this is the interesting point, most teachers have really not been trained in that. okay? They kind of do it because we're used to dealing, interacting with people live and in color and in 3D. We can touch them, feel
them,
see them, okay? But all of a sudden, okay, the touchy-feely part is gone, all right? We can just see them, okay?
Yeah.
All right? There's a remoteness to this. It's one-dimensional, not three-dimensional anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you're an expert on this. And most people have no idea how to build a community. And by the way, you know this as well as I do. Situate is a wonderful middle-class, upper-middle-class community. All right? But there are challenges in urban education and rural education. Every school district's different. All right?
Yeah.
So you're an expert. Okay, so how do you learn, if I don't know if this is possible to answer, to build a community on a remote learning situation? Because you're an expert on this. Go ahead, Dr. Borkowski.
Yeah,
answer that, O Countess of Community.
Yeah, in the next few minutes.
Conquer the world in the next few minutes.
That's right. Climb Everest.
Go ahead.
That's right. Well, look, I have to say this again, and that is, well, let's think about and play to the strengths of our educators, because you may not know sort of concrete, articulated steps for building community, but most teachers I know do create community with their students. And so part of my job is to sort of reflect with and unpack with the teachers what they already do. So if you spend some time having students get to know each other, so you know, one of the first things you might do is you have everybody in your class go around the room and say, you know, the classic question is, right, what's your name and what did you do this summer? What was your favorite thing you did on summer vacation? How can that activity translate into a remote space? Well, you can use something like Flipgrid, which is a quick, easy video tool that students can reply to a prompt. They can post their video and share with their classmates, and then their classmates can watch the video, and you can watch the video. And then all the information that you collect from that video, you can incorporate into future lessons that are math lessons or ELA lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So you're already doing this, and so it's a matter of catching and capturing what you already do and then figuring out how to translate it into a remote space.
It's amazing. I have to ask you this, because you're, again, an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins, okay, the School of Education. All right, now, again, I know your colleagues. Believe me, I love them all, okay? I'm not going to go down that list again and bore everybody, but I do, and I really appreciate this. How do you think that all of this is going to change teacher preparation, the schools of education, okay?
Mm.
And I hate to say this, but I've talked to many professors. They agree with me. Schools of education tend to lag behind. It's the oddest thing, okay? But they tend to lag behind, okay? As opposed to like a medical school that seems to be ahead of the game. Okay, a school of education tends to lag a little behind of what's going on. I can't explain that, but just everybody tends to agree with me. I include professors in that, okay? And they all admit it, but we don't know what to do about it. But now we've got this major change, okay? And it's forced upon us, but it's going to last. It is going to make a difference. People have suddenly realized this. How will this affect, how will teacher prep change? And we can focus it on Johns Hopkins. Are you guys even talking about this?
Well, of course we are.
I knew you were.
You have to give me a softball. Well, I guess the first thing I would say is I don't know that I agree that schools of education lag behind. I think what happens at colleges generally is we're doing the best we can to train our students for the jobs we can't imagine, right?
Okay, I agree. I'm only telling you what so many professors have told me. Yeah,
that's fine. And the other thing I would note is that most of the learning that we do really professionally happens on the job. And so I think between the teacher prep and then the school districts themselves, I think there needs to be some thought about how to support teachers. So to your question, I think both teacher prep as well as school districts are thinking hard about, you know, to what extent do we need to be training teachers in virtual settings? To what extent do we need to be talking about pedagogy in an online environment? And to that end, I think districts are also looking at sort of their human resources and saying, it's not enough to have one IT person anymore. You know, we need to have an instructional designer. We need to have someone that knows how to do this. Because, I mean, even in a district like Scituate that is, you know, admittedly high resource, they only have 3 IT people for the entire district. So imagine, right, spring came and they had to completely pivot, and these 3 people are tasked with getting all of these teachers and all of these families online. That's crazy, right? Crazy.
It is. It is. Yet somehow they were able to do it. They were able to do it.
Somehow they did. They did. And it was amazing. And so I think districts, you know, I think districts and teacher prep programs are thinking a lot about what do these programs look like? Can we start offering classes, you know, in different modalities so that teachers are taking classes in different modalities and so they're also experiencing what their students might experience at some point. I think the other thing that's going to happen, Larry, is that consumers of education and consumers of other products are going to start demanding multiple modalities, that it doesn't just have to happen face-to-face or it doesn't just happen to happen. So I think we're going to be forced to think about this even if we don't want to.
That's a great point about consumers, the parents, the students asking for something different. Okay, now that they've tasted something different, okay, they're going to be demanding this. It's consumer demand, et cetera. And actually, school districts have been dealing with that and trying to deal with that for quite a while, and getting the community engaged opens up that I'll call it Pandora's box, but it's really a good Pandora's box, not a bad one. Yeah. Okay, because consumer demand really, really matters. Okay, in this, because education is so it's just so community oriented, etc. It really, really has to be. What are you hearing, Carrie, in terms of successes? I mean, and I'm asking it for a reason. We always talk about the challenges, all right? And the problems, if I may. But and one of the things we're trying to do with our consortium is come up with the solutions. Okay, it's enough talking. We know everybody knows the problems. All right, let's talk about the solutions. Right. So what have you heard? What are the gems that have come out of this that are really working and working well? And talk about that from your point of view about building community learning spaces that work and create relationships, etc. Go ahead. What are the gems out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in the spring, what we saw really quickly, this wonderful sort of coming together of all these different sort of education tech companies and making resources available for free or for, you know, a less expensive. I think that was amazing. What I've seen in our state and in our district, and really from colleagues talking about it as well, is just the stronger connections that are being forged among teachers, leaders, and parents, because really now more than ever, we are co-teaching, right? Even if you're in a hybrid model, parents or caregivers are having to take on more. And so it's really reestablishing these great connections and relationships, which should have been happening already, this sort of partnership between schools and families. So I think that has been terrific. I've seen universities, I've seen, you know, K-12 rethinking their assessment policies. Like, do we need SATs? Do we need the GRE?
Oh, yeah.
What should our grading policies really look like? I mean, we're asking really good questions right now. Like, what that we need to know about our students to measure success, and what does success look like now? Because
that's right.
You know,
the whole idea
again,
that's right. The whole idea of assessment in these crazy times. Okay,
yeah,
does that really mean, and what really is learning? What are they learning?
Yep.
All right, it's key
that's
stuff.
Right.
You brought up something very interesting that we're trying to do. All right. By the way, the oil guy just got here. That's that noise clinking in the background. he plugged the hose in, everybody. Just that's that banging noise over there. All right. But here in New England, we all have oil heat. There he goes. Here in
that's
LA.
Right.
Okay. So, of course, the pipe is right next to my office here, so I apologize for that. But but you brought up something interesting. This is one of the things we're trying to do with our consortium, and that's about the industry. You said how all of a sudden in the spring, everything that was out there became less expensive or free.
Yep.
Everybody stepped up, all right, to help. And I've always complained because I know the industry and all the players in it so well. They're really good people. And a lot of them pop out of the world of education to begin with. Okay, they were all classroom teachers or administrators or whatever who create products or go to work in the industry. And the thing is, all right, when the industry meets educators, they're always meeting in a sales situation. And all of a sudden, the industry stepped up and showed really, hey, we're going to give this to you in this emergency time. And one of the things we're trying to do with the consortium is create that place where the industry and educators work together. I thought when you brought that up, that was really interesting because you're my first guest to have really brought that up, okay, how they all stepped up. Okay, and how we work together. When you talk about building a sense of community, that's exactly what that does. It's just amazing. Okay, it's just so important what happened there. So that's a really good success story, is that the industry actually did build it up. Okay, what do you expect? What's the next step down the line? Now that we've been in this for 7 months, what's the next step down the line?
I think that, who knows, Larry? Really, right? Like, I want my kids to go back
to
school.
Carrie,
I don't know
do
about
it.
You. I mean, look, I think we're going to have to ask a lot of really important questions about, you know, what does, like we talked about earlier, what does success look like? And when I think about teaching in, you know, a graduate program or watching my third grader and kindergartners learn right now, I'm really asking, what do they need? Like, what is it that they need to know? Like, what should the curriculum include? And what I'm figuring out, Larry, just from watching my kids, is do they really need to be in school from, you know, 8:30 to 3:30? And if so, what should they be doing? Because they're getting a lot of what they need in a half day plus a few assignments, or, you know, a few hours plus some asynchronous work. And so it makes me wonder, what should the education model look like? And I think we're going to be asking ourselves a lot of questions. How should we and can we use the time, this precious time that our students spend with these amazing teachers? How can we make the most of it? You know, and what could that look like? And what are the lessons we can learn from being in this pandemic? I think we need to do a lot of reflection and soul searching when this pandemic finally settles down. And I'm hoping that we don't just, you know, revert back to the old ways. I really hope that some great learning comes out of this terrible moment.
Yeah, I hope so too, and I hope we can really learn something from this, because the American team seems to be a little slow. Bill Maher said that this week on his show. Fareed Zakaria was on, and he said he hopes to learn. Everybody learns big lessons from this pandemic.
Yeah.
And Bill Maher half sarcastically said, I think it's going to take more than one pandemic to teach us a lesson. Okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I will say I was talking to a few colleagues the other day and we were saying that if this pandemic had ended after the spring and we had returned in the fall, perhaps that would have been true. But I think because it's gone on into the fall and potentially in the winter, I do think we're going to learn some lessons from this. I think it's gone on long enough that people are really starting to reflect on, you know, what the learning is and what we could do moving forward. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. And I think teachers are learning. I think you said this at the beginning, to go full circle. Teachers are learning a lot about themselves. Okay, teachers have a great set of skills. A lot of them don't know that because they're in a milieu where those skills are just taken for granted, and everybody around them has the same skills. But when you have that skill of communication and organization, all right, and persuasion, I might add, okay, these are incredible skills, and I think teachers are learning just how important these skills are and that they actually have them. Okay.
Yeah.
I think they sell themselves short in some cases, and they shouldn't. They should.
Well,
I don't know if
the teachers sell themselves short, or they just feel dumped on by the district and the families and the parents. And I think in this moment, I have seen, you know, many more people, and just in general, as we were talking about in the community, we're just, I think we're giving each other more grace and kindness and empathy, because this is hard for everybody, right? This is just hard. And so,
Yeah, we're better than ever. The standing joke at the beginning was all of a sudden parents are going to learn that maybe it isn't the teacher that was the problem. But seriously, the teachers have great skills. And like you said, and this whole thing, and I'll tell you, Carrie, you are truly an expert on the cultivating and the belonging. And I'll tell you, this is your time to shine, my dear. I hope a million people signing up for your courses. How many courses are you teaching right now at JHU?
So I have two this fall, and then I have several more in the spring. So I am definitely keeping myself busy, Larry. No worries.
I bet you are. I know you are.
Yeah.
I mean, all you're teaching graduate students, right? They're on their way to their doctorates, right?
Yeah, I'm teaching graduate students, and I'm also what's called the first year cohort lead for about 80 doctoral students. So they keep me busy for sure.
Cool. Actually, let me ask you a question on that. As education changes, this is interesting. People, you know, have to do their thesis on something.
Uh-huh.
And have you seen the subjects of the theses, I guess, starting to change?
Yeah.
Okay,
as
they take a look. Can you give an example? That's kind of interesting. I never thought of that, but you see that every day. How's that changed?
Absolutely.
The thesis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the dissertation and the theses are changing in many ways. The ways in which we collect data, the kind of data we're able to collect, and then also sort of the questions that students are asking. Like I had a student, for example, who was looking at stress and anxiety in seniors who are applying for colleges, and that was her initial thesis. And what she's pivoted to is sort of pre and post pandemic, what does the admission process look like with respect to requirements and SATs, and how does that sort of contribute, you know, either to mitigating the stress or increasing the stress of these students? So her whole, you know, her whole research area has been sort of turned upside down, because, you know, when they used to apply to colleges, of course, they would visit, right, physically.
Right.
They would take these SAT tests and all these sorts of applications, and the schools are doing it all differently now. So she's really focusing on that as a leader at that school, focusing on understanding that process and whether or not this is going to be a lasting change, as we were talking about earlier. So,
wow, that's pretty cool. I always like to tell the story back many thousands of years ago when I went to college. Okay, nobody ever thought of visiting the college. Okay, that was something that never happened. Okay, everybody just assumed that, like, if you applied to the University of Kansas, that if you got there to Lawrence, Kansas, or Manhattan, okay, there was actually a university there with brick buildings. That's what you made the assumption. Okay,
there was no need to visit the pretty brochure.
And so we all got by without visiting the campus. All right, but
if
I had said, "Dad, take me, can we visit the campus?" He would have looked at me like I was out of my mind. Okay, but.
Yeah.
The world has changed. Yeah. So we're going retro here. I love it. Tell that doctoral
That's
student
right.
that. They should talk to me. I will help them along the way.
There
okay,
you go.
No problem.
There you go. That's awesome.
If you ever
That's
want to
so
teach
funny.
At the University of Larry, I want you to know, Carrie, you are always invited here.
I appreciate that, Larry.
No problem. We give tenure. I don't know how long it takes to get tenure at Johns Hopkins. I'm sure it takes longer than at the University of Larry. I can almost guarantee it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay, so just always keep that in mind. Okay, you are wonderful. We love you. You know that, and your writing is great. Write for us anytime in the magazine. Okay?
Yeah,
and thank you, Carrie, for everything you do. You are a real gem. Okay? So thank
great.
You.
Thanks, Larry. It was a pleasure. All
right.
Take
You're
care.
Welcome. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Carrie Borkowski, everybody. Dr. Borkowski is an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University, as you can tell, one of the great ladies out there, and she really does a hell of a job, okay, for cultivating community and creating that sense of belonging that you do all the time without even knowing it. She knows you do it, and she studies it, okay, and makes sure other people follow your lead, Okay, so what can I tell you? It's great stuff over at Johns Hopkins. Super place. All right, we're going to archive at education dash. No, we're not. We're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. All right, our equity website. Please go over there and join with us. My voice is going again. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.